You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Friday, July 25th. At a meeting earlier this week, Astoria City Councilors greenlit an additional $58,000 for repairs to the city's reservoir number 2. City Manager Scott Spence said that during the city's annual reservoir inspection, they found that 5 of the panels covering the reservoir to prevent evaporation had degraded to the point where they would need to be replaced. While funding was already in place for the panel replacement, it was later determined that the reservoir must go through a disinfectant process that was not part of the initial contract approved in March. Astoria Public Works Director Jeff Harrington said that he doesn't know of any other reservoirs experiencing cover failure like the one experienced by Astoria's Reservoir Number 2. The cover panels were installed in 2010. Harrington said while their life expectancy is about 20 years, he would have expected to get more life out of the panels than that because the area gets less sun than other areas. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian. Read more online at dailyastorian.com. City leaders have approved a new program meant to provide clearer guidance on how people might be able to land grant funding and loans through Astoria's urban renewal districts. This week, the Astoria City Council, acting as the Astoria Development Commission, approved the creation of the Astoria Partnership Program. The program outlines 3 funding mechanisms: a gap financing loan of up to $250,000, meant to get people who are already coming in with other financing or grants over the finish line for a project, a revolving line of credit up to $150,000, and a matching grant of up to $50,000 for nonprofits or community partners only. City Manager Scott Spence says the program gives city staff and applicants, quote, sideboards on what it would take to actually access the urban renewal funds. People who attended the city council meeting praised the program, saying it could be a big help for local businesses. At a meeting last week, the Nehalem City Council raised water rates by 8% to keep up with increases in the utilities budget. The increase comes as the city heads into a new fiscal year. Nehalem city leaders declined to increase water rates in 2023. City Manager Lori Longfellow told councilors that the water revenues were the city's financial lifeblood and urged the city not to fall further behind on updating them. Nehalem's base water rate for 3/4-inch pipes will now be $65.85. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Ilwaco record store owner Michael Mathis announced last week that he was suspending his campaign for mayor. Mathis said that he was dropping out of the mayoral contest due to other obligations. He also said he was throwing his support behind Eddie Hillard, who is now the lone challenger in the race against incumbent Ilwaco Mayor Mike Casinelli. Because he dropped out of the race so recently, Mathis's name will still appear on the primary election ballot that began arriving in Ilwaco mailboxes this past weekend. Mathis is the second candidate to drop out of the race after the initial filing period closed in May. Former Ilwaco City Councilor Don Berger dropped out of the race soon after filing week had ended. Berger also endorsed Hillard after ending his short-lived campaign. Washington's primary election day is August 5th. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. A military veteran, Travis Decker, is accused of killing his 3 young daughters outside Wenatchee, Washington, raising questions about whether he had adequate mental health care. Now, some veterans are asking for increased mental health services to prevent the next tragedy. KUOW's Eilish O'Neill has the story from Wenatchee, and a warning to listeners, this story includes discussion of murder and suicide.
Lots of veterans saw Travis Decker in the weeks before he's believed to have murdered his daughters. He was homeless and staying at the Wenatchee National Guard building, and he was looking for help. Rob Bates is a mental health counselor for veterans and is himself a combat veteran. He saw Decker walking out of the Grant County Veterans Services office just a couple weeks before the murders.
So he was trying to engage services. We just didn't have the services that he needed. I think most of what I have is anger at the system because the system failed him. We failed him. We failed Whitney, and mostly we failed those children.
Vietnam War veteran Dwayne Broaddus also saw Decker outside a gathering place for veterans in downtown Wenatchee called The Bunker.
Late afternoon, and I was going out to my truck, and I saw a gentleman at the door, and I went back and I said, "Can I help you?" And he kind of blew me off. "Who are you?" And I recognize people with PTSD. I looked at him and knew that he was in trouble.
Bates and Broaddus realized they'd met Decker when they saw his photo on the news. His three daughters had been found, suffocated, near a campsite in Chelan County after he'd failed to bring them home from a scheduled visit. Whitney Decker, Travis Decker's ex-wife, declined an interview, but we were able to speak with her lawyer, Ariana Cozart, who worked with the family for the past year. Cozart says Travis Decker's mental health deteriorated after he left the active reserves in 2021.
He suddenly felt very alone and was still facing a lot of ramifications of his combat that he saw.
He had trouble keeping things together and became homeless. He was living in a camper van and at the National Guard Armory in Wenatchee. Cozart says Decker sometimes showed bad judgment, like taking the girls camping in Montana without telling their mom. So because of that, and because he had no stable housing, Whitney Decker took him back to court to ask that he not be allowed to have the girls overnight. The court agreed, and after that, things started to get better. Cozart says Travis Decker had never been violent toward Whitney or their children.
He loved those girls. Like, he really did. She never thought he would hurt those girls.
Cozart says Travis Decker was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder as he was leaving the military, but she thinks he likely also had complex PTSD. The judge in the custody case ordered him to get a psychiatric evaluation, an anger management evaluation, and twice monthly therapy. Court records state neglect and emotional problems as the reasons.
And Travis did contact me after the hearing and say, "How do I get these evaluations? What do I need to do?" I directed him to the VA because I thought that they would help him. I know that he called the VA and said that he needed to get a psychiatric evaluation and that they told him they couldn't do that. I know that that is incorrect, that they do them all the time, including locally.
Cozart says Decker did not get the ongoing therapy he was supposed to. She says he did call the Veterans Crisis Hotline at least once, but that's just for crises, not for follow-up care or ongoing therapy.
If we would have the resources that Travis deserved, earned, needed, that could have saved these girls. This really could have been prevented.
We reached out to the VA regarding Travis Decker's access to mental health care, but they did not respond.
That was Eilish O'Neill reporting. You are listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.